Welcome to the Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast. My name is Bhairav Patel.
And I'm Alan Clark.
And we're here today with Kieran O'Toole, and really here with you, Kieran, because you've got experience in both being an entrepreneur and an intrapreneur. So my first question to you is, what is an intrapreneur?
Hi, Alan. Hi, Bhairav. What is an intrapreneur? I was worried there because I thought you were going to ask me to spell it first. But, an intrapreneur, certainly from my mind, is you're working in an organization and you're working for an organization. You're not necessarily working for yourself. And that creates a different boundary in terms of entrepreneurship, where you really are doing it for yourself, and intrapreneurship, where you're doing it for the organization that already exists effectively. And your mindset is somewhat different to an entrepreneur, but there are still some similar things. So I would say that in intrapreneurship, there's a safety net, whereas in entrepreneurship, there's either not or certainly less of a safety net. And because of that, I think your appetite for risk taking in intrapreneurship is actually somewhat limited, not just by your environment, but also by the organization can limit your risk appetite. So entrepreneurship is boundless potential. Intrapreneurship is limited potential. Also in intrapreneurship, it's very much about the communication aspects, because if you're working in an organization, there is legacy there. There are other interdependent relationships. When you're building as an entrepreneur from scratch, you normally will start with just yourself or with a co-founder perhaps, and it's a very small unit. And once you start to go to 4 people, 8 people, 16, and the multiple moves, the levels of communication and organization change. But because you're going on that journey, you're adapting it all the time. When you hit an organization and you're going through entrepreneurship, you know, there's layers already there. One of the big challenges is actually uncovering the layers, because there's the obvious layers and there's the not so obvious layers. And there's the hidden layers. And someone listening or watching might think, what does he really mean by that? So you can understand after weeks or months the relationship between certain departments or individuals, because you hear it and you see it. But then there will be historical stuff that you can't see, and you'll wonder why. And there'll be all sorts of nuances in an organization, which the negative is can impede you, but the positive is once you kind of figure it out and unlock it, that it will accelerate. But one of the biggest challenges in entrepreneurship is how you work with people and how you communicate with people. And you cannot take an entrepreneur's approach of just smash it, just smash right through that, just get on with it. Let's go over this hill right now, because it doesn't work like that in an entrepreneurship when you're trying to get everyone aligned with you at the same time. So there's certainly similarities, but there's some significant nuances in how you navigate the environment. So that's a very long explanation of entrepreneurship and entrepreneurship, I would say.
That's really helpful. I think just to help set a little bit of context for our listeners, could you maybe explain a little bit about your background on entrepreneurship and entrepreneurship?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, we're all some of our experiences, right? So everything you do adds to where you are now and will continue to do so. So if you're someone who started by, you know, selling stuff on a street corner, you're destined for a career as an entrepreneur probably, right? But if you're someone who started in an organization and worked through it, you're more likely to be an entrepreneur. So my experience is I've been in media companies, technology companies, finance at this stage, being an entrepreneur, starting a business, failing, succeeding, all of those things that come with it, and in entrepreneurship, working in organizations to make things happen. From an entrepreneurship perspective, one of the first businesses I worked in, I think it's really important the situation you find yourself in with your boss or your leader or the managing director, the chief executive, and that mindset, especially when you're younger, because that'll shape. So I've been very fortunate that I've had leaders who've always been either entrepreneurial, they started the business and they've grown it out, or entrepreneurial, they'd made really interesting things happen in large organizations. And I'd learned from that. And one of the best things probably was working in businesses that were always challenger businesses. So they'd fostered entrepreneurship. They weren't always necessarily number one, but they wanted to get there. You know, we're number two, so we try harder, kind of like Avis, right? So they fostered entrepreneurship. They wanted people to try to make things happen. And in the companies I worked with in Ireland, media companies, you know, that was there because it was a highly competitive media market, because Ireland is a small island, effectively. In the UK, one of my best experiences was with Guardian Media Group, and they had sold 50% of their share in Auto Trader, and they got 500 million pounds for it, right? And with that money, the Guardian, which is owned by the Scott Trust, is very entrepreneurial in terms of how it's going to make sure it's well funded and make sure that it always has a future. So there was always this kind of mindset and investment pot in the Guardian that if anyone in the organization had an idea, they would hear it out and they would maybe support it. So I was only there a couple of years and I had an idea to kind of start dabbling in subscription, media subscription. And they were very interested in that. And I remember getting a budget of £50,000 to start that journey of entrepreneurship into the organization. And that was a great experience. And that built to many other things and bigger budgets and new challenges, and eventually led to other businesses, where one in particular worked with Alan on. And that is one example, or a couple of examples of entrepreneurship. Taking it to where I am today, what I've done certainly the past few years is go into an organization and either try to change an aspect of it. So one more recent experience is modernize their marketing function. So how do you take what they're already doing, which is good, but make it better, make it more efficient, more effective, you know, digital marketing, but it's just marketing, just using different tools and technologies. So in doing that, you can, that's what entrepreneurship at a departmental level, a specific level. And then you can take it further. You can go into the wider business, and what you'll be familiar with, you know, change programs, transformation programs. When I hear that, it makes me very nervous, because it doesn't necessarily follow a set process. There's no blueprint for every organization to follow that they're going to have a successful transformation. And this is actually where your entrepreneurship experience comes into play, and where you can blend them. So my experience as an entrepreneurship, either starting a business myself or with co-founders, either a small business, small enterprise, or leading into a bigger one, failing, succeeding, all of that kind of stuff. You know, I've worked a lot in the music industry, and even something as simple as promoting an event is entrepreneurship, right? Where the risk is you need to sell 95% of your tickets before you make a profit most of the time, right? So it's a very high risk game that, but can be very rewarding if it all goes well. So I suppose my early experiences with entrepreneurship has been promoting events, and I'm going back 20 plus years, and I've done that for a long time. And you win some and you lose some, and some people go on and become professional promoters, but I don't think I have the heart for that, because it's total heart attack material when you're dealing with those margins. But all of that entrepreneurship of making things happen yourself on your own time, on your own back, those learnings were very helpful to bring into an organization when you're then tackling entrepreneurship. And it goes right back to the start of this conversation about the nuances between the two. And I think to be certainly what I've learned, and I still feel I'm at the start of the journey, is that it's the situational awareness to know which tool sets to use in certain circumstances is what's going to make the best of it. So I've got direct entrepreneur experience and direct intrapreneur experience, and I'm still learning every day, but it's what I find is knowing which situation you're in, where the business is on its, you know, development curve, if you will, what type of organization is, and then applying all the different things you've learned. So I would say, in answer to your question, Alan, I'm not a specialist really at anything. I'm very much a generalist, and across entrepreneurial and intrapreneurial side of
And that raises a really interesting point that I've thought about often. I think you started off by saying that you're largely an entrepreneur by nurture, that you happen to find yourself in positions and places where it was an opportunity and encouragement. Is that because you believe that entrepreneurship is a nurture, or do you think there's also a nature aspect to it, that you're just born to do this? But is that then a coincidence of being born to do it and the opportunity coming up?
That's a great question. My belief is that it starts with nature. It's in your nature to be inquisitive. And it's in your nature to go for it. And to do it well, I would say, needs the nurture part, right? Because you can have all the will in the world, but if you don't get a little bit of direction and nurturing, and fair challenge, your chances of improving yourself and getting better at it are potentially somewhat limited. So I do think it is in individuals' nature with their mindset.
What's your view on the nature nurture thing?
So I was going to actually, so this leads into a kind of point that I've got. So I think you're right, Kieran. I think you have a certain element inside you that wants to go and get things done. And then the next part is, do you have the environment around you that allows you to execute? Right. So a lot of people will have the desire to go and do things, but they just don't know how to start, and they won't, and they'll feel lost in that process. And once they get on that process, they'll go wild. And then there's other people who will feel it inside them and then really are really terrible at it because they think it's one thing, and then actually they'll find the reality is completely different. Right.
But
one of the things, and I was going to be quite controversial here, right? Because I was speaking to, when I first came back to the UK after traveling abroad, I was speaking to someone who was in the, had a FTSE 100 business. And he said to me, when you're networking, do not talk to anyone who's got the title head of innovation, because they're basically put in there as a kind of a nod to, yes, we're going to be entrepreneurs and we want to do something different. But really, they've just been given a budget to do nothing, and they'll just talk a lot. And you did actually see that. You'll see that. I mean, and I don't want to name names, but I came across quite a few who just massive FTSE companies, head of innovation, doing what? I have no idea, right? And I met a guy who was working on the Unilever project. So Unilever had this big accelerator, lost billions internally because they realized they wanted fresh ideas, and they brought them in, but they all failed simply because as soon as they came into the big machine just strangled them. Now, how do from your perspective, obviously you being an entrepreneur, and something like The Guardian sounds very interesting, but how is it that, you know, you'll come up with an idea, and then do you find that they kind of polish it in such a way that it ends up becoming just part of the standard thinking?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and in multiple organizations I've been in, so I absolutely agree with you. Innovation, anyone with innovation in their title, I would put a question mark at the end of that sentence, myself included, right? Because what does that really mean? Is this the Wizard of Oz who's going to make magic happen? And the first answer is absolutely not. Because in my head, There's no such thing as innovation as a direct outcome of what you're doing. There's iteration, right? And if you get very, very good at iterating things very quickly and to a good standard and cost effective, you know what? Out of the 100 things you do, 99 of them should be good iterations. And one of them, if you're lucky, might actually be innovation. It's like, the more times you fail, the greater chance of success. And what I mean by that is you don't set out to innovate. I certainly don't. I don't set out to create something that's never been there before. I set out to make what we've already got better. And in that process, we might find something that is truly new, truly innovative. But I say this to my teams, it's like, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel or the world. We're taking what we've got that we know works. How do we make it better? And in making it better, what do we learn from that? And in learning from that, do we identify an opportunity to do something else? And then does that become new? So I completely agree. Innovation is really a misdirection in terms. And if someone, you know, I've had these conversations at events, just like yourself, Bhairav, and Alan will have had. And if someone says they're really, you know, they're innovating and they're doing completely brand new stuff, I my skepticism meter increases dramatically about what they're really actually doing. And do they understand what they're doing? I don't innovate. I try to make better and try to make better as quickly as possible to learn. And then maybe we'll find something that is actually innovative. But even if it's just a really good iteration, that's fantastic success. But to your second point, Bhairav, how do you actually get ideas through in an organization? That's a nightmare, right? Because the machine already exists and it has a process. And if you imagine it like a conveyor belt, and you have to go on that conveyor belt to get your idea through. So the big challenge is, how do you stop it being, how do you stop it being, I'm trying to make sure I use appropriate words here. How do you prevent it from being either strangled or from being manipulated and mutated into something it's not, just so that it conforms with the business? That's really, really difficult. And what I've learned and experienced is, your first challenge in that is your ability to communicate and your ability to influence others, right? And not present the idea as a threat to anyone or anything in the business status quo. Because as soon as it's perceived to be different and potentially a threat, then you've got a massive problem, right? So you've got to spend a huge amount of time before you even propose the idea at an investment level to an executive or a board to make sure that the leaders or the main voices understand the idea, are interested in the idea, and are willing to work with you on the idea. Yeah. So that is one thing. Then another approach to take, because that can take a long time. Another approach to take, which I've done, and is generally actually my first approach these days, is when you identify a gap in an organization, take the innovator's dilemma approach to it, and take a really radical approach to it. Rather than trying to say to the business, oh, if we change a few things over here, it could be better. Say to the business, what we're doing is great. And one of the problems we need to solve is whatever it is, you know, X. Why don't we just set up another business or another business unit over here to tackle that problem and invest in that and just have it work completely separate? And it at first appears exceptionally radical, an idea to do another business or another division or another department. But then when you get into the business planning and you go through it all, actually, good business people start to see it. That makes a bit more sense. The danger with that idea, though, is that when you do something separate to the business, you still encounter the problem I mentioned just there at the start, that it becomes a threat to other things in the business, and you still have all of those issues to deal with, but you get your idea way faster.
But yeah, so that's why buy-in is such an important thing. I remember I was working as a consultant for a very large global business, and I was part of a very small team that was looking at some innovation across all of the different business areas. So they had, it's a large global company. It had, I don't know, at that time, like 5 or 6 different product areas in there. And I was working as a part of a small team there to look at how do you streamline across those areas and take the strengths from each of the areas and build into one big thing. And obviously, as part of trying to pull things together, you ended up having to remove some personnel, right? And that's where I think that it all failed, because none of the line managers were invested. And what you found as you went down the tree was that everyone's like everyone's kudos and everyone's like measurements, KPIs were based on how many headcount they had. When you start removing people's headcounts, people start losing their purpose. Yep. And that was crazy. So one of the things, actually, another, I don't know, Alan, if you've got a question, but I've got just one quick question in here, which I guess is probably never quick, but, you know, how important is it for entrepreneurs to have intrapreneurs? So, for example, what we're doing at Atom at the moment, right? As you're going through a growth phase, we're seeing that some of the things that we're thinking and doing are a little bit old school, because we're a bit older in the tooth, right? And so long in the tooth, as I say. And so we're kind of taking on old ways of working and old ways of thinking, and actually realizing we do need to start some fresh thinking. So I'm actively trying to get my team to start thinking differently, even though we're trying to think differently outwardly. Inwardly, we're trying to do the same thing. So how important do you think something like that?
I think that's really important. And one of the things I've learned, particularly over the last 5 years, actually, is I used to think, well, what is the problem we're trying to solve? And you've just articulated one there, right? And for a long time, I often used to think technology will solve that problem. And I used to think, how would technology help me solve that problem? And particularly over the last kind of 5 years or so, and as more technology is being commodified, right? And it's pretty standard, and you can get it to more or less do anything you need it to do. What I've actually found is one of the most important areas to focus on to problem solve is process. And in any business is the process. How are you making things happen? And you've got, you know, one of the things I would say is very valuable to any business, SME or large enterprise, is to, and this can be painful, is to bring in people who have probably been from a software development background and know multiple techniques in problem solving, such as Agile or Lean or Scrum or all sorts of stuff, right? Because a lot of organizations tend to either have one person or one group who practice all the same process, right? Yeah. Or then they'll say, oh, we're going to now do this other process. We're going to do Agile. You're going to do Agile. Alarm bells straight away, right? Because you're not practitioners in it, and the business doesn't run Agile. So you're not going to retrofit. It's a complete fallacy. So you've got to have people with multiple process disciplines to challenge the way you work as a business. And what I've been involved in and certainly experienced and witnessed is, that is really challenging, kind of like the whole idea of strangling good ideas, right? You try to change a business's process, it becomes very challenging. But it's a really, really important aspect for any size of business to question how you work, which is what I believe you're asking me there, Virav. And I think it's definitely about making sure you have the right person or persons who have a broader experience in process management and can understand which approach, more so than the process, which approach would be the better approach to use to solving whichever problem you've identified. And that's, I think, what can keep a business really on its toes. How it works and how you work internally. And I don't believe that's something that's taken seriously enough these days. It's kind of like technology for the last decade in any business. We've got to go digital, right? We've got to digitize everything. And a lot of businesses, you see all the job adverts, digital this, digital that, still a thing, right? But over the next decade, I think the smarter businesses will really think about how they work and what approach and process they're putting into the way in which they're approaching problems. And that is what will actually keep them fresh, not necessarily the technology.
I think that's hopefully that answers the question. A really interesting point of view. I wrote a blog post a few years ago now in which I expressed the view that this idea of disrupting, when every business seems to be disruptive, really got on my wick, because disruptive is not something new. That's what great businesses have always done. They've looked and said, how can we do this better? And they did it better. And it might only have been a little bit better, Or sometimes people say, do you know what? I think I've got a better solution than horses. It's called an internal combustion engine. And they did it. And you know, that was more than disruptive. Ken, I'm aware that our time is almost coming to an end, and there's some really big things I think you've shared with us there around entrepreneurship and doing it is very much about finding the right environment that will encourage it and nurture those who have an interest in it to doing it well. I think there's a really interesting point as well around that actually it's not all about you, it's about your ability to influence those around you, particularly when you're within an organization. But even when you're not, you have to go and influence customers to say, actually, have a look at what we're doing that's maybe different to how you're getting it done already, and maybe we can do a better solution for you. And I love that idea at the end there that, you know, frankly, I'm sick to death of digital. I just think it's the most over, it's now even worse than disruptive. Because as long as you put the word digital in front of it, it's cool and sexy. But it's not really, because digital isn't the answer to everything. Digital isn't the answer to building personal relationships. You know, sometimes that is just about good old hearing with two ears and talking with one mouth and listening to people. And I love the other things you're saying about process there as well, about having people in that are open-minded. So there's a whole bunch of things you've shared with us. Is there anything else that if you were back when you set out on this, what, 25 years ago maybe now, that you wish somebody had taken you for a pint and just said, here's three things I want to plant in your mind now that will help you succeed in that line of business, and where we call it intra, entre, or just the way you are, in your view on, I want to go and create stuff, what do you wish they'd said to you?
That's a great question. So I would say whether, you know, well, first and foremost, enjoy what you do, right? Don't do anything you don't enjoy what you do. That would be great advice. Second thing, be curious. Always ask questions. There are no stupid questions. Don't be afraid to ask questions, right? And I suppose number three, do different things. If you want to be entrepreneurial or intrapreneurial, do different things. And that's probably what I meant about, I'm not a specialist at anything. I'm more of a gen. I've done just loads of different things. And I think that's really helpful.
Because I know, Kieran, just very briefly run through the jobs that you've had.
Over the last 25 years?
Yeah. Started out as a radio presenter on a country radio show.
Before that I was a barman, actually. So I was a barman, DJ, nightclub promoter, event promoter. Been around the world, country music. Radio show, produced talk radio shows, became a programmer at a very young age, basically programming radio stations, became an operations manager, moved a business to a new business, started getting into the building game. Then I actually worked for a Japanese company in a factory on production line management, learning all sorts of different stuff. Where would I have been at this stage? Then I came actually over to the UK. I did a stint in sales. I used to sell advertising, literally knocking on businesses door to door, and doing that. Then because I came over here with no job, I came over here just because I wanted to come over here. So then I got a gig, back running a radio business because I'd done that before. Then I got this opportunity to go and work at The Guardian, ran a couple of radio businesses for them and did a couple of startups for them. That moved on to other things. Then I went down to London and I worked for a really big media organization in mergers and acquisitions, and was part of teams that did some really big media deals in the UK. Then I'd known Alan previously, and then Alan and I and a couple other guys had this idea, and we went and got a large sum of funding to run a business. And I wish I had known then what I know now about how to do more things. I'm sure Alan does as well. And then on the back of that, a mixture of consulting and other things, and still promoting music events, and I have holdings in other types of businesses and roles and stuff like that, and just a real stramash of stuff. But it's always something to do with an idea and how you can probably leverage it through technology. And most importantly in the whole journey, work with people you like and enjoy it. And all of the things I've done, all my failures are of my own making, and anytime anything has gone well is only because of the people I work with. It's never been by myself, never. And that is a lightning fast 25 year journey to where I am today. And I would say, honestly, I feel right now, starting this call with you guys and just thinking about these things, I feel like I'm still at the start of the whole thing. So really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, it's been excellent. So I guess it's we've reached the end now, have we not, Alan?
I think I get the feeling we might have reached the end of episode one with Kieran O'Toole. Because, as I say, I've known this chap for more than 15 years, and there is so much more going on in there that I think is really valuable just to sit and listen to. But I hope you've enjoyed that. That's the end of this episode of the Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast. Look forward to seeing you next time.
Goodbye, everybody.